It's the only time you have control of Bob McCowan. Let's go. Subscribe to Primetime Sports Podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand. If Bob didn't say it, then it probably ain't true. This is Primetime Sports with a man who cannot tell a lie. Bob McCowan. Primetime Sports. Now on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
This Wednesday, hump day, March 4th, 2015. McCowan here, Brunt's right there. Where's your jacket? Are you dressed down for Bettman?
Yeah, I just, it didn't occur to me that that was what was happening today, so I just addressed.
Oh, you forgot?
I dressed for radio today.
You forgot Gary was coming in?
Yeah, I did. Oh, I forgot all about it. But, you know, he's everywhere here. He's been all over the building, so it's hard to forget now.
Have you seen him already?
No, I saw Bill Daly in here earlier with our buds in the afternoon.
Your buds. No.
And then there was a big dog and pony show over in the other building, a Rogers thing that I believe Gary was going to make a special appearance at. And there he is. See?
Oh, okay. So he's on his way in. I'll have to apologize to him for your...
I don't know what he did at the... He was the kind of the...
Shabby attire.
Yeah, well.
Well, Mr. Bettman... Come in, sit down, join us.
How are you?
Nice to see you as always.
How's everything? Everything's great. Sorry I'm late.
Well, that's okay.
Mr. Pelly at his town hall meeting.
What? Yeah,
place at the building.
They promoed you coming. Well, you were the secret guest. I had to leave. But what did you do, like plate spinning at the end, or what was the
absolutely? Yeah. That's a specialty, plate spinning. No, you know, just the usual. Good greetings.
So
how are you?
Good. You?
I have no complaints. It's all good.
All of it?
All of it.
Everything?
I like things just the way they are. No, everything's fine. I didn't mean to leave you speechless.
No, I'm...
Are you not happy?
No, I'm fine. I'm good.
Is everything good?
No, everything's
all
fine.
Good?
Everything's good.
And you?
I'm relatively okay.
Okay, so we're all good.
I got to work, but, you know...
Well, we all have to work. By the way, it's a pleasure.
I'm going away for a week tomorrow.
Where are you going?
I'm going to the Bahamas.
Nice. Where?
Atlantis.
Oh, very nice.
You've been?
Many times.
Yeah, it's a nice place, isn't it?
It's a great place.
Great place to take kids, too,
yes,
actually.
Yes, it is. You taking kids?
My daughter's, my youngest is 13, and she's been now, this will be her third trip, and she loves it there because she loves water park, right? And she loves the slide.
They have that great slide. Do you do the slide?
No.
I've done the slide.
Have you?
Yeah, just once, though. No, once was enough.
Oh, the big one?
Yeah.
Through the sharks?
Yeah. Well, the sharks are really, they're just a
well, I
tool,
know, but
you know.
Now, so when you go down, So Atlantis is a big theme resort in NASA.
They hope they're an advertiser by the time we get there.
I believe that may be happening here, yeah.
But you go down this slide, and it's almost straight down.
Yep. You actually feel like you're just in free fall, that you're coming away from the back of the slide.
The late John Panetta. Are you familiar with John Panetta's humor at all?
No.
John Panetta, who just passed away like a year ago, tragically, did this thing about water slides. And how the slides today, he says, my ass never touched the slide.
That's right.
The whole way down.
It's true.
It's really free fall.
Yeah.
And then you go down. And
that's why I only did it once.
And then you go underground.
Yep.
And through an acrylic, I assume, tube.
Yep.
Between where the sharks are swimming.
Correct.
Now, I'm thinking you're going so fast and you're probably so scared, you didn't even see any sharks when you went through there.
No, I saw the sharks.
Did you really?
But, you know, based on my reputation in some places, the sharks were more scared of me.
I can understand that.
Yeah, that was a joke.
Anyway, so that's the plan for tomorrow.
That's great. Have a great time.
You don't get away in the wintertime anymore, do you?
Rarely.
Yeah. Do you go up to you got a place in what, New Hampshire?
No, Vermont.
In Vermont. Well, I knew it was New England someplace.
Yes, that's good.
I think so, one of your predecessors used to go on vacation during hockey season, I believe.
I'm told.
I believe that was the story. Yeah.
Now, do you get up there in the wintertime? I got a story. Tell me this. Do you really have a complete ice rink in your backyard up in Vermont?
I have a pond that freezes, and if during one of the breaks, I'll show you a picture of the pond frozen. It's on my cell phone, which my colleague has in his pocket, so it doesn't go off in here. So I will show you the pictures.
So do you go skate on it?
When it's frozen, when I'm up there.
Well,
but,
yeah.
Well, this year, I haven't been up there. The last time I was up there was around Christmas. My kids and my grandkids use it. It's good to be my kids and grandkids.
So do you have boards up?
But actually there's enough snow that you kind of get a low natural.
Yeah.
But we have nets, and we have it lit for at night.
You got lights on it, too?
Yeah, well, it's one light covers it. You know.
Yeah.
It's a little primitive, but it works.
No, sounds great.
And it's a beautiful setting, and I know people
well, I've
find
heard
that.
About it.
Have you heard?
Well, I can't tell you. I have spies.
Well, you do?
Yeah, and they told me that you had this place and that I should see it.
Well, so. Anytime you want.
And I heard you had a rink in the backyard.
Well, yeah, sort of.
Sort of. Well, but, it's a pond, but it's frozen. And
yes.
Now, do you fish? Are there fish in the pond?
There are fish. We've had it stocked to keep the pond
less
algae free. My son's the only one who's ever caught a fish. In all the times I've tried, I've never caught a fish in there. Trout, about this big.
Really?
Yeah.
How come? Are you a crappy fisherman?
Apparently.
Like you haven't had success.
No, actually, I have caught fish, but I was up in the Arctic doing that.
Are you a fisherman? Like,
no.
Is it one of
no,
the things?
No, I've done it. You know, I like to experience things,
yeah,
you know, and
I understand.
You do like the slide. You do it once and you move on and do something else.
Go find a lounge chair and
a good book.
And a Bahama Mama and a good book.
That sounds good.
All you need.
That sounds like what you're going to do.
That's what I'm planning on doing a lot of.
All good.
So the announcement today that Rogers has acquired the Canadian broadcast rights.
Shocking.
To the World Cup. It is stunning news. Well, let me ask you this. There were some suggestions in the media that perhaps the bid was rigged.
No, we wouldn't do that.
So what was the process?
Well, the process was, and it was something that we had discussed with the participants so that everybody knew going in, and it was what they wanted. Anyone interested would come in, make a presentation, and give us a bid. And in fact, the first bid we got was in an envelope that we didn't open until after we got the second bid. And then we looked at them and we considered the presentations and we discussed it with the Players Association because the World Cup is joint.
It's a partnership.
Partnership, joint decision, and we made our decision.
And I guess the point ought to be made that in the United States, you went away from your rights holder and did a deal with
ESPN. There were some scheduling issues there as well. But so we ran the process strictly on the up and up. Nothing was rigged. And in fact, you know, if one side had blown the other out of the water, Rogers would have accepted that and understood it. It was a conversation I had with Keith in advance.
So just to be clear,
yes,
were there other bidders besides Rogers and Bell?
No.
In Canada?
Those are the two bidders.
And I made to understand that was Fox and ESPN in the U.S.?
There were three bidders in
NBC
the U.S.
bid too?
Yes.
As well?
But NBC was
had
issues, and we understood that.
Okay. And when did you or have you announced the U.S.?
Yeah, we did them both today.
Oh, okay. So ESPN.
Yes.
Got that.
And interestingly, ESPN has said to us, not only are they glad to be back doing things with us, they're going to help promote the start of our season on NBC. It's good for hockey.
How do you feel about the relationship with ESPN now? I gathered it was a little strained back in the day.
I think, you know, again, that's one of those media things where...
Well, I'm asking.
But I want to address what's out there in the stories and the speculation. We had a disagreement over the importance and the value of NHL hockey in the United States. And, you know, happens all the time that, you know, you make decisions based on where you think you'll be most valuable, both in terms of how you're treated and what you receive. What was then Comcast's OLN turning into Versus, turning into NBC Sportsnet, and NBC really stepped up for us at a time that was very important. We were coming back from the year off, and we chose very well in terms of who was going to treat us well and bring us back. And then when we made the next negotiation, which was the deal we made, I guess it was 3 or 4 years ago, they felt and we felt that going exclusively with them in the United States made the most sense. But even when you're looking at ESPN and having the World Cup, the other three majors in the U.S. are on multiple platforms. So, you know, you got to pick the right situation, look at the opportunities, and look at who's going to take care of you.
It's interesting what you said about it. So ESPN pledges, does that just mean that they'll amp up their regular NHL coverage as well as part of this?
No,
we're
going to promote the start of the season.
So they'll
as well.
They'll cross promote even though they're ABC and
Which is good, because if they've got a property that's important, which they view it, it's important for them. And it's a long life in a small world.
Sure.
And the relationships are always good. And in fact, I've always had a very good personal relationship with John Skipper, who now runs ESPN, and George Bodenheimer before him. So, no, you know, I know it's always fun to report that, oh, this happened and that happened, and they're mad at each other. It's not true.
It wasn't true. It was just business.
Not true. And just like I believe we have a very good relationship with Bell. They do a lot of hockey coverage with our teams. But you make decisions, and, you know, they're not personal. They're business.
With Gary Bettman. So I think most Canadians understand this, that ESPN is an entity unto itself. It's here in Canada, you know, Sportsnet and TSN, I don't know what the ratings are, but they're comparable.
Yeah.
They're pretty much, you know, 1 week one guy wins, next week the other guy wins kind of thing. In the U.S., nobody's really challenged ESPN in terms of their market share, the size of their entity. And it's perceived that leaving ESPN, while it ultimately turned out to be economically beneficial for you, cost something.
No, I don't think so? No, and for two reasons, and that's a great question. When you look at ESPN has lots and lots and lots and lots and lots and lots of stuff, and they've got, you know, carriage in lots and lots of places, a lot of homes, although as there's a lot of cord cutting going on, we'll see how that all sorts out. We needed to be in a place where we could schedule. And remember, if they've got lots of other stuff, then you got to look for whether or not you can get the schedule you want. We needed to get a level of promotion and importance that NBC was prepared to give us. ESPN with baseball, football, basketball, college,
and on and on.
They're great, but what we needed, particularly coming back off of where we were and the way we had to build and the fact that we weren't on national TV for a couple of decades in the United States, we were dealing with a whole host of things. NBC is great. They have very important properties, but they had space and a need for us that made us more valuable to them, not just for the money, but in terms of promotion and scheduling and everything else we get. So we made a decision that wasn't strictly about the money, because money, you know what, that's a short-term decision. You've got to look at this long-term to see who's going to give you what you need to grow the game and give it the prominence it needs.
So it wasn't entirely about, or was it entirely about, a desire on the part of ESPN to move you to the deuce, as they call
it. Well,
ESPN,
you know, I mean, there was part of it. There were lots. You know what? It was a few years ago, and I can't recall as I'm sitting here now with precise certainty what the issues were. But yes, what our schedule was going to be, where we could fit in, how we were going to do the playoffs.
Gotcha.
I knew when NBC, one of the things that we were discussing, and this may seem crazy, being in Canada, talking about it in this way, because all the playoff games are on national TV.
Of course.
Well, you know, you go back 25 years ago, the Stanley Cup Final wasn't on national TV in the United States. When, up until this deal with NBC, the all-encompassing deal, not all of our playoff games were on national TV. And when they said, we're going to light up some other platforms, be it CNBC at the time, or maybe USA, but we're going to cover all your games nationally, that to me was a game changer for us and vitally important.
So very different discussion than the Canadian discussion where you know you're going to be the top of the food chain here. And there.
That's right. We had things that were important to us in Canada, but it wasn't the same thing. These deals aren't negotiated on a cookie cutter basis. The template and outline we were using in the United States is not the one that we used when we ultimately made the 12-year deal with you guys.
You're here because of the World Cup. Let's talk a little bit about the World Cup.
We can talk about anything you want.
Okay, well, we will, but...
Oh, good.
Well, we've talked about your house and your skating rink and things, so we'll get to some other stuff.
I'll show you those pictures. Wait, do we take breaks? Or we
we're going to take a break. Yeah, we're going to take a break.
Then I'll show you the pictures, and then you'll say, holy cow.
Well, that's what I hear.
You know, okay. It's a pretty great. It's a beautiful setting.
I hear it's fantastic.
It's like, you know, Pond of Dreams. You know, if you build it, they'll come, except it melts.
Well, maybe not this spring.
not this winter.
Not the way things are going.
Yes.
Compare the World Cup.
Yes.
To the Olympic Games.
It's a best on best tournament, and that's about it. I mean, the comparison isn't there. The Olympics are an amazing platform. Get lots of attention. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always get accused of being anti-Olympics. But meanwhile, I'm the one who got us into the Olympics, and I'm the one who's had us there for five Olympics. Mm-hmm. But when I get asked the question, it's a balancing act, and I always feel compelled, because the positives are so obvious, I always feel compelled to point out what the difficulties are in the decision. It's not that I'm negative about it. One thing I want to make clear, and I said this when we announced the World Cup in Columbus, the decision to do the World Cup has no bearing on the Olympics. That will be a freestanding decision that, again, we do jointly with the Players Association. Best on best is great. Doing it at a season when we control it, we control the access to the players, we control the promotion, we control the media, that's all good. We don't get to do any of that on the Olympics. Different stage, different platform. By the way, we're going to do this one in Toronto and make it a big celebration and festival. You know, the next Olympics, Winter Olympics, is in South Korea. Mm. And the one after that is either in Kazakhstan or China. And so it's something that we're going to have to evaluate together. The common thread, if there are a couple between the Olympics and the World Cup, is one, our players, we have a history and tradition of international competition, and our players love playing in international competition. They do it from a young age.
Right.
Okay, that's good. Secondly, we're an international sport. 25% of our players come from outside of North America. There are lots of fans in those countries that want to see how the players in their countries do in the world's best hockey league, and anything we can do to get them engaged and continue to encourage the development of world-class hockey players outside of North America is a good thing.
Gary, you're coming. So this comes back 40 years after the first Canada Cup.
Yes.
And, you know, especially in the hockey world in Canada, lots of great hockey memories through the Canada Cups and through World Cups. But why didn't it take? Because it didn't, really.
Well, because there were, and you don't need me to regale these, but there were lots of issues in the union when it was controlled by the union. And there was an era of less than cooperative relations between the league and the union. And then there was a period of uncertainty at the union because they went through a number of executive directors. And now we're at a point where we've done a lot of things to make us stronger and healthier in North America, which is always the primary concern. We have a system that makes the game competitive, enables all teams to be competitive and stable economically. So that's kind of good. And we're in a bigger, better place than we've ever been. And at the same time, the union's now more stable than it's ever been, so that we can work together, particularly in an era of long-term labor peace. We can work together on projects like the World Cup. I know people like to point to the three work stoppages and say, me.
It's a dance. Okay, yeah, I understand.
But more than that, it created an atmosphere and, frankly, an instability in the union that didn't enable us to do the things that needed to be done cooperatively with the union. And in particular, the World Cup is part of a partnership. We do that outside of everything else as partners with the union. And we had to have a dance partner.
If you'd had the conditions to establish, if we have a 40-year history of World Cups, mm-hmm. would you guys ever have gone to the Olympic Games?
I don't know the answer to that.
Any reason to go to the Olympic Games?
It's a great question. When I started making the arrangements to go to Nagano in 98,
I was dealing with what I was dealing with. Just like on the labor front, I was dealing with what I inherited. And so I did what I had to do at the time that made sense. And going to the Olympics, certainly the first time in Nagano, based on where things were, made sense.
What's interesting is you talk a lot about the partnership with the PA, and of course this whole World Cup is a partnership. And you've talked a lot about the history of the union and the chaos that leadership changes and philosophical changes. And in comes Don Fehr.
And worse, predating me, which led to some issues. You know, in other words, Eagleson to Good now. I mean, there's a whole history.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. And so.
Which does tie into international hockey.
Exactly right.
Yeah, right. So now Don Fehr comes in at an interesting time and almost immediately goes, you know, puts his gloves on as you had yours on, and you go to war, if you will. And there's a perception that this is going to be a confrontational relationship. And Don is a public figure who has a long history in labor negotiations and baseball. So it's not a guy we aren't familiar with.
Right. I think he had 6 work stoppages in baseball.
Yeah, but they haven't had one in 20 years.
Yeah, right? I understand. But they also the only
I get
league
you.
Without it. But anyway, the point you're making, I think, is Don comes in, we butt heads, which is not uncommon when there's new union leadership. A new union leader in a new organization, even though he has a history somewhere else, has to assert himself, couldn't just make an easy deal. This is me projecting a little bit. And so, but we've known each other for years. We're both, you know, fairly mature guys and sensible, I think. And we then went about the business doing business we had the deal.
Well, to be fair, you know, Don had a pretty strong hand in the building the MLB business with, you know, with the last commissioner, right? It, you know, once they got past, you know, fighting with each other,
Listen, the business has to be run by the league, but having a cooperative union on business initiatives helps build the business.
Yeah, I say, but he is a, you know, I would say Don Fehr is a creative thinker in terms of how you build a sports business in the 21st century.
Well, I wanted to ask, what's your relationship with Don like now?
Very good.
It is?
Yeah. I just finished spending a few minutes with him, chatting about things, talking about issues of common importance and trust and communication. I think we're in a good place. That doesn't mean we agree on everything, but I think we're in a good place.
Was that critical to getting this World Cup off the ground again?
You know, that's a great question, and maybe it's a chicken and the egg. I think the World Cup gave us an opportunity to work together on something.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, working together builds a relationship and builds trust, but you need some degree of trust and relationship to work together. So I think the two kind of came together.
Well, clearly. I mean, it's hard for me to see this relationship being tenuous and building a constituency of the World Cup.
And I think long-term labor peace helps do that as well. The only agenda that he and I should have is to do the best for the game and our constituents. And, you know, again, while we don't agree on every little thing, the fact is we're trying to work together for the benefit of the game.
Do you talk to him on a regular basis?
Yeah, we do.
Weekly?
I probably either see him or talk to him at least once a week.
Are there always issues that you need to address?
Issues, not necessarily issues, opportunities. You know, we're
joint venture things.
No, we want to do player tracking. So we're and I'd like to do that with the players' cooperation, not doing it in a difficult way. So there are always things that we can do. And, you know, and when Don gets questions from his constituents, you know, there's a rumor about a franchise or something, then I tell him, call me. I'll tell you anything. We have the Industry Growth Fund, and there's a committee that does that. We have tons of committees on player health and safety, on the substance abuse program. I mean, there are lots of ways that we can work together that make this good for everybody.
One thing I was kind of interested in, Gary, is, you know, I assume, you know, what you guys want, I assume, is for this to settle in, the World Cup to settle into the point where it's like the Soccer World Cup or the Football World Cup, where everybody says, of course, every 4 years.
That'd be awesome.
Every 4 years is a World Cup. It'd be awesome if it was that scale and we made that much money for everybody. But you know, you also brought it back and tweaked the format and tried some stuff, which, you know, I don't know, is it experimental or is it?
And you're alluding to team 7 and 8.
Yeah. Okay. Team 7 and 8. Yeah. So, which does seem like we'll give this a shot, and if it doesn't work, we'll try something else.
Well, because what we wanted to do for the first one, because as you said, we go on hiatus after having this memorable event year after year repeated, and then it goes away for the reasons we discussed. So we want to get this one perfect as the starting point. So we're doing it all in one place. We're doing it in Toronto. We're going to make it a festival and a celebration and maybe tie into the film festival and do Taste of Toronto and concerts and have people come from all over the world to be a part of it.
So kind of Super Bowl-y, right?
Even bigger because lots more events, lots more games. It's not just one game.
But you can plan years ahead and all that stuff, right?
And we decided in the context of putting it together, we didn't have the time or the opportunity or inclination to do a qualification round. So you look Canada, U.S., Czech, Russia, Sweden, Finland. And then the drop-offs pretty great.
Yeah.
Okay. And then we say, well, you know, what do we do to make sure that all of the games are entertaining and interesting, competitive and compelling? And we started talking about, well, let's try for the first time as we're establishing the event. We got a lot of players from countries that really don't have enough NHL caliber players to ice a competitive team. So why don't we take the remaining countries in Europe and put them together and get kind of a pan-European team other than the big four, and that would get more NHL players in who would want to play, be much more inclusive, and be kind of entertaining and competitive, because that would be more competitive than any of the remaining European teams,
sure,
at least out of the box. So we do that. Same thing with the 23 and under team. There are a lot of great young players that are emerging as stars in our league from Canada and the U.S., who in the ordinary course, because of the abundance of talents we have here, wouldn't make the team. So let's really have a team that maybe it's the dark horse, long shot team that will create some interesting stories and give some young stars an opportunity to emerge. I think that one's going to capture people's imagination. Is that locked in for the long term? No. But in terms of this tournament, having every game meaningful, competitive, and exciting, I think that it's going to do the trick, and I bet every game is sold out.
You know, I get that, and I, you know, and I, you know, it's a little, it's
that
kinda,
makes
it's,
one of us.
It's kind of gimmicky, but I get it.
Well,
I just wonder,
gimmick's a bit strong.
Okay,
it's a little creative. It's a little out of the ordinary, but I don't think it's a gimmick.
I think Bob would go for gimmick.
Well, you know, but I can't
tell you how much I hate it.
I want you to hold that thought, and then talk to me in 18 months when the tournament's over.
Oh, I wouldn't be surprised. Look at. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if Team Punk plays the others in the final game.
Okay.
The under-23s play the other guys from all over the place in the final game. I think if you're going to build a World Cup, if you're really going to be taken seriously, if you have this plan for longevity, if you see this as a tremendous opportunity to grow the game and make it a real, legitimate, not an exhibition tournament, but something every player aspires to be a part of, and I think the World Cup of Soccer is that, then there's a better way to do it.
Okay, and I'll ask you to think of three words: fantastic, memorable hockey, and that's what I think we're going to get. This is the starting point, and we're going to build from there. We're reintroducing into a very crowded sports and entertainment marketplace our World Cup, which had been on hiatus. This event is going to get a lot of attention. It's going to be a great event, and it will be the jumping off point to maybe get to what we discussed before, the soccer equivalent.
Well, I understand where you're going.
Okay.
I like where you're going.
Okay.
I just don't like your first year of it.
Well,
and that's, you know,
I respect that.
You know, you and I are of the same era. We're approximately the same age. We remember when the All-Star game was in baseball was a big event because we didn't get to see everybody.
Yep.
I got to see Willie Mays and Mickey Mantle, who I didn't get to see every day. Today we can see them any day, great players any day of the week. That was important. And I don't like under 23s getting in, because I think you got to earn your way in.
But you don't. But, you probably wouldn't like watching Latvia play Slovenia either, would you?
Yeah, by the way, and that's the other point. Hey, guess what? This is a great discussion, and you know what? We're going to have this debate, and it's going to get more attention for the World Cup, and maybe while you and I are still young enough to have our wits about us, yeah, we'll get to a point that you'll be happy with. This isn't bad. It may not be your first choice, and I think it's going to be pretty darn good, but I respect the view.
Okay, why not go with 6 instead of 8? And I understand you're 100% right. Even 6 is a stretch.
Well,
truthfully.
And frankly, we wanted the tournament to have legs, and I think we needed 8 teams to do it right.
Okay, here would be my other suggestion if you'd called me.
You can do that, but we've already decided, but go ahead. So well, no, when we don't change plans, don't be offended.
I'm not going to be offended at all.
Good.
So, but the notion that there weren't, that you wanted 8, you needed 8, there weren't any options, no time to have another tournament. That makes sense to me.
Good.
There's a world championship in April. Why not take those 6 teams that you've already blocked off, the next 2 best teams from that world championship get in?
Because we want the 150 best players. And there are a lot of great, we got a lot of great European players that wouldn't get to participate if we didn't do this. Great NHL players. And frankly, for the 8th team, I'm fascinated, I'm intrigued, and I'm excited about the young stars.
Well, I think there's, look, we could talk all day about it. And
yes,
it's just an argument over opinion. And at the end of it, if you wind up only doing this once, well, that's an interesting question. So what happens if these 2 kind of made-up teams perform well?
Talk to me in October of 2016.
Maybe we keep them in, huh?
No, I think we're going to learn a lot. And what we want to do, we want to put on a great event. And we think we have all the hallmarks of doing it, from the Air Canada Center in Toronto, from our broadcast partners in Canada and the U.S., from the teams we're going to invite and put together. It's going to be fantastic hockey. Well distributed, carried, promoted, and we think there'll be great stories come out of it.
Do you think the single site thing will have legs?
I'm just going to ask that question.
Because, you know, it kind of, I understand exactly, you know, again, why on a kind of a Super Bowl basis it makes sense. It's like a culmination event, you know, and it's, you know, your culmination event is the Stanley Cup Finals, but you never know who's going to be in. There's all kinds of variables. And the play-in, you know, the multiple site thing, especially multiple continent thing, was complicated, expensive, and tricky, right?
But, well, and we want to get our sea legs, so to speak, and then we'll take the cruise ship out on a bigger cruise next time. We may move it around. We may do multiple sites. This is, again, our view is let's have a perfect event that people love. Now, people may debate the 7th and 8th team, but the hockey is going to be incredible. So let's get it good, and then we'll build off of that. That's the theory.
We've got other things to talk about.
Okay.
Mr. Bettman's going to stick around. We're going to take a commercial break and come back with another 10, 12 minutes.
Great.
With the commissioner of the National Hockey League. This is Primetime Coast to Coast on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Primetime continues on the Sportsnet Radio and Television Networks, Canada's most listened to sports talk show. Bob McCowan, Stephen Brunt in our Toronto studios. Later, Donald Fear, Executive Director of the NHLPA, Buck Martinez of Sportsnet, Jerry Sullivan of the Buffalo News will join us. But the Commissioner of the National Hockey League is in studio with us for the full hour, and we're just kind of getting warmed up. Las Vegas, give me an update on what you've heard. Last I saw, there were a little over 7,000.
That's what I've heard. We haven't gotten a formal report yet, and we'll see. I'm not here to sell or extol the virtues. We're listening, and as we are from a number of other places, but what they're doing in Vegas, what Bill Foley is doing in Vegas, is testing the market to see if it's really interested in supporting professional sports.
It's a funny market. I lived in Las Vegas. I have a pretty good idea of what goes on there. I think you know that the demographic there is intriguing. Yep. The hours that are worked are intriguing.
Yep.
The the quality of competition, entertainment competition, is almost, I don't know if it's second to New York, but it'd be up there.
Yep.
Do you have a feeling, a personal feeling, on whether hockey goes in Vegas?
What's interesting is if you look at the statistics, the growth in the population, the level of income for a lot of the jobs there are very good paying jobs, mm-hmm. The size of the market without a professional sports team, on the surface you would say, gee, they should be able to support a team. But it is a unique market. Mm. People work interesting hours. Their weekends are Monday and Tuesday, not Saturday and Sunday. And so when Bill Foley said to us, I'd like to test the market because I want to decide whether or not to continue to pursue my quest, I'm saying to myself, yeah, why don't you do that? We'll find out whether or not.
What's the downside
there's
for you?
There's nothing there. And so I don't know the answer to the question, but when they get done with the ticket drive, I think we'll have a better indication. Because in our informal discussions, we've said, listen, you can't sustain a professional sports team, whether it's hockey or anything else, if the casinos buy all the tickets. You're not going to do this on the basis of tourists coming in. If there's more casino consolidation, if the economy goes down, you need to know that there are real fans there. And they did all this market research, which they said they believe there are, but let's test the market. And we don't have a problem with that. I know there are some people comparing this ticket drive to Winnipeg, but that's apples and oranges for a number of reasons. First, when Winnipeg obviously was an established hockey market and people were anxious to get a team back. Secondly, they had a pre-existing season ticket base from the AHL team. Mm-hmm. And third, they knew when they did the ticket drive that they had a team. Here, they're doing a ticket drive on, well, we'd like a deposit, we'd like you to show interest, but we're not telling you there's going to be a team there at the end of the day. It's a different dynamic. And if they have 7,000 or 8,000 tickets already, that's pretty good. Is that enough? My visceral reaction is, I don't think so, but I really haven't thought it through.
So how do you interpret that, Gary? Because you know there was a ticket drive in Winnipeg. We all know how quickly that went.
For the reasons I stated, it was different.
There was an unauthorized ticket drive in Hamilton. They sold a lot of unauthorized season tickets there. That went pretty fast. So aside from the amount of money this franchise could be worth, you know, mm-hmm. which would be significant, and I'm sure the governors would be very interested in that. What else do you have to see? Like, how do you interpret a drive for a team that doesn't exist?
It depends on how strong the drive is. If the drive is strong, listen, if they're still doing the drive in September, then obviously this isn't working. If they come to us in a few weeks and say, you know, we have X number of double-digit thousands, there's support here, that'll be nice, and he'll stay in the hunt. We haven't promised anything, and that doesn't mean we're going to expand, but at least he'll continue to pursue it.
So there's no kind of template here, right?
There's no template. But it goes to Bob's point that we don't know what kind of market is, and this is a good way to test it, whether it's for us or for some other sport.
If it was a different... How important was this guy, this owner, Mr. Foley?
Well, Bill Foley is a substantial person, right, who's well-respected. Like you, he's in the wine business, mm-hmm. He clearly has the resources to do it. And they're building an arena.
They are.
Which is under construction as we speak. So he believes that putting a team in that arena makes sense and that he's the guy to do it. Okay, and we're listening. We haven't done anything with that other than continue to listen and interact in ways to be constructive for him to measure the interest.
Is getting into that market first an attraction, a factor?
My guess is whoever gets in first will also be last.
Yeah, I mean.
I don't think that's a mark. But you know what? I know everybody said, oh, you get a lot of money for an expansion team. There's a qualification to that because when you add another team, you now have an additional team that you divide national revenues mm-hmm. from. So whatever we distribute to the teams gets reduced, and there's a price you can put on that reduction in cash flow by having another participant in dividing up the league-wide pool.
Geography plays a part in this to some extent. Clearly, you would prefer one, maybe even two Western teams in your next, if there is another round of expansion?
Well, you don't expand just become symmetrical.
I get that.
Okay.
But
if you're going to expand, I haven't focused on the issue, so I don't want people in Quebec City to read too much into this, but clearly having 14 and 17 creates issues. I don't know how to deal with them. I haven't really thought about them, but it's something you got to focus on. If you added one team in the West, could you add another team in the East and be 15 and 17? I don't know. My gut reaction is if you can have 14 and 16, you can have 15 and 17, but we haven't gotten there.
Yeah, I understand. Speaking of Quebec,
yes,
how are things going there? Been very quiet.
We have a very good relationship with TVA as part of our overall deal. They have an arena, but again, we're not in an expansion mode. I know there's interest, but it's not anything we're dealing with right now. At some point, we may start to focus on it, but we're not at that point.
Do you think there's going to be a relocation discussion in Phoenix when you don't?
No. I know it's popular fodder, particularly in places that would like to have a team.
Sure.
To say, well, Phoenix and Florida have to move. Phoenix is digging out of the hole that was created and extended when the league ran the club, and there was great uncertainty about the future. They've got more stable ownership and greater resources and a commitment which lets people re-engage, which is a plus. And in Florida, they had to blow up the business model and start over again.
But the Phoenix guys are going to have a window open in that lease,
yeah,
are they not?
But they may or may not. Depends on how much money they lose, because the window only opens if they lose a certain amount of money. But the guys who bought the team say they want to be in Phoenix. They want to make it work. Vinny Viola, who owns the team in Florida, used a business model which resulted in severely discounted and free tickets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could have been a season ticket holder, and every game there was somebody different sitting next to you who got the ticket for free. Then their attendance is down, but everybody is in the buildings paying the ticket for ticket prices and paying to get in. They're investing in the team. He has the resources to see it through. And from everything he's told me, he's committed to South Florida. So I don't believe, long-winded way of saying, I don't believe there's going to be a relocation.
In either place. Let's say that the window gets triggered in the lease in Phoenix, which, you know, could happen, right? It's, you know, given the history of the team.
I'd rather not engage in that speculation, because I'd rather not see that happen, and I don't want to fuel that. If it happens, we'll deal with it at the time. There are obviously places that would like to have a team.
In the last 2 minutes, I want to take you someplace. It was pointed out to me in the last hour that at the 2010 Olympic Games in Vancouver, the hockey coverage of that Olympics in Europe was watched most in Italy.
Is that true?
I'm told it's true.
Okay.
Does the National Hockey League have a game plan to exploit Europe, for lack of a better term?
Exploit.
Exploit the fans.
No. We want to continue to encourage the growth of the game and the development of world-class hockey players. The World Cup for us, for all the reasons we discuss, is the beginning of the platform where we want to do more exhibition games, more regular season games, clinics, regular broadcast of games, being involved in Europe and around the world on a more regular basis than we have been. Everything we've been doing to date has been more spontaneous, one-offs. We want continuity, and now we're finally in a position where, with the reintroduction of the World Cup, we can do that on an orderly basis.
Do you have an office in Europe, anywhere in
Europe? Not yet, but I anticipate in the not-too-distant future.
Does it change anything, Gary, if the KHL collapses?
You know what, I don't focus on the KHL as much as everybody else. It's not the NHL. It's not at our level. I don't say that to be arrogant. It's just not. The economics are unsustainable, and with the ruble in decline, they're even less sustainable. They're going to have their own sorting out. Now, having said that, I know hockey's important in Russia, and I know because he told me that having a super league, a high-class league, as high-class as it can be, is in Russia is important to President Putin.
And what's important to him is important to...
No, but that's it. By the way, you have to confirm to your listeners and viewers that you actually saw the pictures of the rink.
I saw the rink. It's unbelievable.
Okay.
I can't wait to go.
I also saw
the house. I didn't say very much. Nice little shack you got up there, Gary.
It's a cottage, right? Isn't that what we call them?
Yeah. It's a little tiny little place. It's like, you know, it's got a couple of
cobblestones and a couple of pieces of wood. It's pretty nice. Great to see you. Thanks a lot for stopping by.
Always good to be with you.
And go team under 23.
As he says with sarcasm dripping.
The commissioner of the National Hockey League, Gary Bettman. Buck Martinez, Jerry Sullivan, Don Fear in the next hour. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet, radio, and television networks.